Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
The center of the galaxy. This is the Four Center podcast feed, and this episode is one of our deep dives. We're going to dive deep into When Star Wars is Snowy. More on what the hell we mean by that in just a moment. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok, and actually, I'm pretty excited for this. I'll explain why.
Excellent. So much great stuff is coming up in just a moment. But first, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend Tempest Runner by Kevin Scott. This is another adventure in the High Republic series, giving you a peek into one of the big villains. So if you're interested in that audiobook, you can download it today by going to audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. But Ken, that is not all.
Not all, indeed. We have another offer from our friends at Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, and they're offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, The Secrets of the Sith, Sheev's Burn Book. Again, use the link insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
Yeah, dig into the Sith for the holidays. So speaking of the holidays, it is in many parts of the world. The winter season, the snowy season. And it really just got me thinking about, you know, celebrating the winter months by talking about snow and snow and ice planets in Star Wars. Starting with Hoth and then going all the way through to Muldo, Kryze, and the Mandalorian, snow and ice planets are just such a big part of the galaxy. And we're going to discuss what they mean to us, how they contribute to the thrill, the aesthetic, the great cold weather gear in Star Wars, and just how all of the snow and the ice adds to the actual meaning of Star Wars. So, Ken, I want to start with our journey. We both started with the original trilogy. So Hoth is a fundamental part of Star Wars to us. What did Hoth mean to you as a kid?
This is why I was so excited. We, you know, behind the scenes, when we're spitballing our deep dive ideas, sometimes, you know, like any brainstorming session, it could be like, what Star Wars serial did we cry over? That doesn't work. And then you touched upon this one, and I got really excited because Hoth was huge for me in a large part because I grew up on Tatooine. at least I could get to Tatooine. I grew up in Pismo Beach, California, as I said before in other shows, but if you don't know, Central Coast of California, about 3 hours north of LA, big beach, big sand dunes that you could actually drive cars on, a little less than used to back in the day, but we can also go play them. So I used to take my Kenner figures out there and just recreate scenes from Return of the Jedi or create my own Tatooine scenes. So I think because I had sand, which I actually legitimately do not like because it gets everywhere. I saw that quote in a lot of different ways.
Anakin is not wrong about his actual sand observations.
Not wrong. Because of that, I was obsessed with Hoth. Spent a lot of time thinking about Hoth. Spent a lot of time thinking about what would I do on Hoth? And the battle itself is huge, and we've discussed some of the big moments in that. We'll bring them up again, I'm sure. So what does Hoth mean to me? Oh, Joseph, it means my childhood and my awe at this giant galaxy and a world that I don't get to go to all the time.
Yeah, so this is part of the thing that I thought would be so fun is that you grew up, as you say, on Tatooine, and I grew up in largely in Minnesota, briefly lived in Portland, Oregon. But that actually gave me even more perspective because, like, some of the kids there were like, snow isn't real, is it?
Right, yeah.
And I was like, it very much is. And then I went back and lived most of my life until I moved here to Los Angeles in Minnesota, Minneapolis, for the most part, in particular. And if anybody isn't familiar, there are huge swings in Minneapolis, in Minnesota. That part of the Midwest gets incredibly hot and humid in the summer, like, you know, 90 degrees, and you feel like you are swimming to walk through the air because it's that thick. So it goes from that extreme with just like a slight wink and a wave to the concept of spring and fall, and then you are into very cold, sometimes just Hoth levels of snow. So I grew up with Hoth levels of snow in different parts of the year. That will inform some of my perspective. But first, I want to ask you what your relationship was to snow outside of Star Wars. Like, did you go and visit anywhere that was snowy? Did you know snow was real?
I did. But it's funny you mention that because I went for a very long time in my life knowing people that had never seen snow.
Yeah.
That's just a lot of circumstance to it. I didn't fly on an airplane till a little bit later in life because my family and I just, we didn't travel. We couldn't afford to travel. So it's all a journey. It's all our perspectives, it's all entry points. But yeah, I was blessed to go about once a year for most of my childhood to a place called Green Valley Lake, which is up in the San Bernardino Mountains. So if anyone's heard of Lake Arrowhead or Big Bear, roughly between them, at the highest point in those mountains that, like, there's a city, is a place called Green Valley Lake. My great aunt and uncle lived there. And often we'd always be there around Thanksgiving. And they're just, tremendously snowy nights. We once, our Volkswagen van almost went off the side of the hill on black ice. Our Subaru station wagon got stuck in snow that was higher than the tires of the car. So I had a lot of experience with snow and a healthy respect for it, particularly on the night when our Subaru just stopped moving and I thought we were there for the rest of our lives. So I had a little breakdown at 8 years old. but then I'd go back down the hill and then it would be like, hey, we'll see you next year. Go back to the sand.
Right. And did you like snow because it was a thrilling sometime friend?
Love it. And now would I want to go live in Minnesota? I mean, it sounds like a great place to be, but probably not. I loved dancing with the snow and then being able to, I guess, leave it behind. But I'm a cold weather person. And where I grew up, the beach, I mean, it was really cold, foggy. And, you know, most of the time it's right there. You can get that beach weather. But yeah, so therefore the snow became kind of this mythical, romantic thing for me to think about. And then when I would see Hoth, it just maybe it tied into those feelings of once a year getting to go experience that. So it did inform my love of Hoth.
Yeah. Did you play Hoth when you went up there for vacation? Did you like want to either like literally act it out or just even in your imagination?
I played maybe even more Endor, because obviously it looks more like Endor than Hoth. But even then, obsessed with the snow and obsessed with snow gear. We're talking about that. Obsessed with snow troopers. Everything about Hoth, the snow, and just that that weather change in Star Wars. Yeah, I would. It would be part of my a daily imagination, particularly when I was inside the family house, supersized cabin. You'd look out at the snow from a nice warm interior.
Yes, which is nice. And this is my final snow question for. Not for the podcast, because it'd be a very short podcast, but about your particular relationship to it. When you went up there, was it around the holidays? Did you say that?
Yeah, always around Thanksgiving. Always around Thanksgiving.
Always around Thanksgiving. And was the snow generally pretty pristine and clean still?
Yeah, we would get a lot of it. Yes, it would. And then it would refresh every night and morning. Like it was, you know, on the nights. And there were sometimes, of course, there was no snow at all or a light dusting.
Right.
But yeah. So, and I was only there for about 3 or 4 days. So then when the snow would start to die, I was already down the hill.
Okay, that's great. So you did get to see some really like holiday time storybook, peaceful, beautiful snow.
Yes. I did though, quite. There was always snow by the side of the road there. I'd be like, Mommy, why is that snow got like oil in it?
Yes, oil or yes, as one of my friends will say that the puppy flowers bloom in the spring when the snow melts.
Yes.
Yeah, for me, that connection to Hoth was pretty amazing because from being a very young age to a much older age, it made some of the really difficult parts of Minnesota winter. There was this glimmer of fun, right? Because there'd be a lot of times from youth all the way up to relatively recent times of, you know, the snow hasn't been shoveled yet, but you got to get to where you're going and you're trudging. And it's just like Luke walking where you feel like you're wobbling with every footstep, but you just got to keep going forward. And just having that little bit of fantasy from Star Wars to make this otherwise difficult thing fun. One of the strong memories I have of like, I'm glad I have Hoth. to help me out. There was a New Year's in at this point we lived in a northern part of Minnesota, kind of middle of the state. The town was called St. Joe. And the I didn't understand what was happening, but some gas pipe burst in our house and we had to go to the pizza place to not die. It was basically like we think it's still open. It's New Year's. We got to go to the pizza place so we don't die. But it was like below zero, like your skin can't be exposed very long. I always got wrapped up a lot for the cold, but this was like, they gave me the Luke scarf and it was wrapped around my face. So it was just my eyes. And it was that like true brutal, like you feel like the wind is like, I guess you're out here 'cause you want to die. So I will do my service to you and murder you immediately. And that, I was able to get through that scary thing. 'Cause like, I'm being like Luke Skywalker now.
I was going to say, was there a healthy fear of what happened to Luke and his Tauntaun and Han and his Tauntaun, or an inspiration or a bit of both?
It was a healthy fear for sure. Of like, keep moving. 'Cause you know, Han's not coming. Han's not going to take me to that pizza place. and then over the years of, you know, when I really started to watch Empire Strikes Back a lot, because I finally had it on crappy pan scan VHS, that shot where Luke finally collapses, right? And he wobbles a little bit and then he just face plants. It's just like, yes, that is walking in the snow. you're just done. I found that so relatable and still do. So as adults, what do we think is the storytelling importance of Hoth? We talked a lot about our youthful connections to it and to our the real physical world. But inside the story of Star Wars, why is Hoth?
Why is Hoth? I think it's interesting to see, you know, from where they go from A New Hope to now. And you could just look at it as, yeah, look, they wanted a different environment. We spent a lot of time on the sand in New Hope. Let's go to something entirely different. But how that just also just works for the rebels, and the rebels going to the far reaches of the galaxy, going to places, you know, it ain't a dream of spring out there. They're not having fun. It's the winds of winter. They're stuck there. And that's how far they need to go to survive. And then that doesn't even keep them there. And it's so cold and distant and dangerous. This isn't a time of celebration, and you're coming out of, the Death Star blowing up, medals being handed out and rounds of applause. What a great time. And here you are, and it ain't the same. And I just still think that is a great thematic backdrop.
Yeah, I'm so with you. I think it absolutely does show a larger galaxy from A New Hope immediately, right? It taps into that sort of fantasy. You know, you crack open Lord of the Rings and anything else, and it's got the desert lands, and it's got the ice lands, and it's got the swamp lands, right? And Empire Strikes Back immediately starts, you know, expanding the palette and including all those kinds of environments. So expands the palette of what Star Wars can be, makes the galaxy bigger immediately. But then, yeah, just communicates the absolute desperation of the rebel base of, like, we have to hide out where no one would ever choose to live, where in fact the weather wants us to die. There are creatures here we don't even know or understand because it is so remote that it has not even been fully charted. We don't even know what that thing is that attacked Luke, right?
Yeah, right.
Everything about it. Yeah, it communicates desperation.
And I was so scared of the Wampa, and I love the Wampa. I collect Wampa collectibles, but like I was terrified that as a kid, they would just pop out of the snow. It was so dangerous for rebels to be there.
Yeah, it's so dangerous because they just didn't understand anything. And then I think as I've gotten older too, there's just utter pain for me. I think in particular, having myself work for some, you know, nonprofit organizations or very small for-profit startups that are just trying to get by. And for me, like just the infrastructure tragedy of Hoth, where they're trying to they can't set up their office in a good space. So they set it up in this janky space to the best of their ability. The second they have it set up, like they got to leave all their space laptops behind. How many USB cables did they lose? Just desperately running out there. They just got set up. They didn't launch any missions from Hoth, right? I mean, maybe they have an expanded canon, but that's not the vibe of Empire Strikes Back. Like, great, we got ourselves a base. Let's go.
No, in fact, I remember being particularly perplexed and frustrated with the fact that the speeders, you know, couldn't adjust to the cold. And I just remember as a kid being like, but how long have you been here? Like, didn't you know this? You know, not picking up on the desperation that drove them there and then drove them away.
It really does have that vibe. Like, we can't get the fax machines to convert to this current of power. Oh, we're in such a weird place.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I love it from that perspective as well. So did the sheer volume of Hoth scenes that you could find in video games as you grew up and became a young adult, did the amount of Hoth in video games add to or detract from your love of that location, the idea of snow in Star Wars?
I really think it helped lock in that mythic feel of the Hoth sequence of the walkers, the danger, the fear, and the excitement of it all, and it became this shared love. And that thing I always talk about of we all have that shared, unique journey through Star Wars as fans. Like, that is one of those things, like, on the playground, I thought, am I the only one that loves Hoth and that Hoth battle? And of course not. And then the video games come out, and it's like you get to reenact this over and over and over because that's what we all daydreamed about. It just made Hoth even that much more of a myth.
Yeah, it just made it more epic, right? Did playing the battle or versions of the battle, did that change your relationship with the battle itself?
I think it made me appreciate it even more because in truth, it's a short sequence, right? It's like it's not it was made during a different time, and it's such a good sequence. But like, you know, it's not like I'm not even trying, not even Star Wars examples, but like any other kind of you know, from Game of Thrones to Lord of the Rings to Kingdom of Heaven or any kind of like long drawn out medieval battle sequence. Hoth isn't that. It's pretty quick. Once it gets going, it's kind of over and the rebels get their asses kicked and they have to go. But to be able to slow it all down and just spend more time, learn the layout of the Echo Base a little bit. I'm still fascinated with that. And I remember even on the first one there, the game that we all, the Shadows of the Empire, when you could kind of get out to the other side, the back garage, I called it. I just, you know, whether or not that layout is canon or still or something, I don't know. Don't really even care. It doesn't matter. I remember walking out going, oh, that's where it was. Oh, I got it. It just continued to just make the whole sequence that much, like you said, epic.
Yeah. I think that battle scene is so powerful. Great contrast to A New Hope, but then lots of battles that we've seen to have it in this. It's kind of snowy, kind of beautiful, kind of frightening, terrain, because we've been told it's that dangerous. We know that they're fighting the cold as well as those machines that are just crunching through it. And, you know, Luke's wobbly on his legs. He's running around doing his stuff there. And just everything about it is aesthetically pleasing, right? From the look of the AT-ATs or AT-ATs and the sound and everything makes it really powerful. I think I've had such a fun relationship with it in video games because it's, you know, for the original trilogy, one of the cool battles. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, one of the first times that I had to figure out the mechanics of how to do the absolutely cool move. There's that thing in video games when you feel like, I'm going to get to do the thing, right?
Yes.
And you're like, and you're in the moment and you're role playing in your own head and like, yeah, this walker's going to go, wah, and then just not at all being able to master the mechanics of how to get the snowspeeder to whip around the legs and then mastering it and feeling so cool. And, you know, just like I'm taking down walker after walker and then moving on to another video game. Like the mechanics of this one are different. And now it's just like I am nothing but, you know, thumbs with no memory and I have to rebuild it again.
Yeah. How do I get that tow cable out this time?
How do I get that tow cable back? Yeah, so it's fun to have something that is so fantastic turn into something that's like, oh, here we go again. And I never stopped loving it because once you actually mastered it, then it's like, oh, yeah. I think that there's so many versions of Hoth that you've encountered in video games, but the most recent Battlefront, the 2017 one, that Hoth is one of my favorite levels. Running around inside the base, but also that big mission where you're trying to stop the advance of the AT-ATs.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The graphics are so great that it captures this very particular thing with cold weather, those moments where the sun is out and high and it is bright and glorious and the sun is just beaming off the snow, but it's all a deception because it is cold as hell.
Yeah.
That's in the movie, obviously, but the graphics on that is like, I live it. It feels like visiting Minnesota.
It does. I even love, that thing they released on Disney Plus, the little, what are they called? The flyovers that you got going on.
Oh, yeah. Biomes, I think.
Biomes. Thank you. That one on Hoth. I mean, they're all great. I actually really love them, but the Hoth one's my favorite because you just kind of get a bird's eye view of what's going on, and I love it even more. Again, I just love the layout, love the walkers. I'm fascinated about the Empire landing the walkers kind of far away. Tactical reasons, probably safety, but also just to like, let's let the fear build slowly. That's an outlet for us.
Exactly. So let's talk about the aesthetic glory of the cold weather gear in Star Wars. For you, it ranks pretty high, right? You're a big fan of the cold weather gear.
I am a big fan of jackets myself. This is one of the weirdest things Oliver say. I understand. Grace thinks it's weird when I say it. I love the art of getting warm. And
I think it's a great turn of phrase because it's almost sexy, but still not.
And you probably have a different view on it from where you were raised and your point of view. But there's it's just something about I love being cold, and then I love trying to see what do I need. Is it a heater? Is it an extra blanket? Is it socks? Is it a beanie? What will get me warmer? And what game can I play? Because I remember I was in New York in 2016. Second time in New York, but it was really cold versus like the first time I'd been in like late fall. It wasn't as cold. And we were doing like a collider thing. We had to walk every morning across town to this office to do our work from this, the complex studios. And I've never that was some of the coldest I had experienced. And it, you would probably, as a Minnesotan, probably laugh, but it was legit cold, right? And I just remember not having a scarf because it never factored into my art of getting warm before, and I had to buy one there.
And
then I loved it. I loved it.
And then you love the scarf because it was a part of your arsenal of getting warm.
Yes. And then I'm not going to lie, as here I am in my early 40s, walking to work, and I put that scarf on and put it in front of my face. I'm like, just like Luke did.
And you're able to feel cool. Yeah, yeah. No, that's fascinating. I think for me and my long relationship with winter gear is, which relates to liking the weather gear in Star Wars, there are a lot of different approaches to the winter and the cold in Minnesota. So I don't want to make huge generalizations, but there is a strain of reaction to the very, very cold and the snow physically impeding your movement and cars movement and everything. There is a pride in endurance, that what makes you a strong and good Minnesotan, maybe a strong, good person, is that you can effing take it.
I love it.
And I have a strain of pride that I can endure weather that is trying to actively murder me. But then there's also that, like, just because you can endure something painful doesn't mean you always want to. And there are people, you know, and it just comes down to body chemistry. And like, my body chemistry isn't any different from growing up there. You know, it's very funny to me to move to Los Angeles and they're like, insulation, what is that? That's a space term from Star Wars, right? And like, if it's 50 degrees outside in my apartment in Los Angeles, it's 50 degrees in here and I'm incredibly cold.
Yeah.
50 degrees in Minnesota, that, especially in like April, a 50 degree in April, you're getting into t-shirt weather, right? Acclimate and you change. So there's that. And just physically for me, like my body, I get affected when I'm cold. I tighten up. I don't like it. It gets into my bones very quickly and very easily. So I want to be warm. I want to follow your art of warm. But then there's also this thing growing up is you didn't want to look dumb, right? You didn't want to look like Ralphie's kid brother in A Christmas Story.
No.
And, you know, some of the fashion that was available to look bundled up made you look weak and dumb and bulky, was like, you know, not. And I just, this is where it gets back to Star Wars. It's like, ah, if I could look as cool as Han or Luke or Leia and be all bundled up, that would be great. But in order to be bundled up, I look like a dork.
I understand. It's the mittens that get me.
It's the mittens. It would have done so much for me if Leia had mittens. Or Han.
Well, I see the Han.
He's pointing at Leia, that famous Han Solo fingers of giant mitten.
Just a big mitten. That would have made, I would have accepted, you know, silly to admit that, but I would have accepted it more if Han had been like wearing the mittens. I'd have been like, okay, I can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there were definitely times for me, like I talked about when I was young, where it's like, I have to bundle up and I have to trudge, that being able to associate that to the winter weather gear, particularly Luke's scarf. There's something about that. Like, it's here if I need it. I'm like, okay, yeah. I need it.
Well, and as Ed, as an, you know, that the Hoth Luke is the only Kenner Luke I had.
Wow.
Yeah. I never
was
got
in the sand.
He was in the sand. Yeah, no, absolutely. I would. That was my Luke. So Hoth Luke was on the sand looking for Jabba as a kid. And so that just that, and that was, again, why I love that sequence. So I think I sought that one out. But you know, you as a lot of any listener knows, no matter what era you are in as a child, like sometimes toys just come to you, not because you got your Christmas wish list dreams come true, but like, an aunt was like, you like Star Wars? Here's an Ugnaught. You know, you're like, oh, okay. And I think that Hoth one just kind of found its, Hoth Luke found its way to me. And much like I always tell the Y-Wing story, if I didn't set out to be a Y-Wing fan, that's the only toy I got on the vehicle side. So I just became attached to it. I think I even became more attached to Luke because I love trying to fold that hard, not really bendable plastic, rubbery scarf in front of his face. So it all kind of adds up too, where it's just built into my love of that Hoth gear.
I've got a love of Luke's Hoth look, partially because I coveted that action figure. The stars never aligned, and I never had that Kenner figure. And when it came out in the, you know, Power of the Force 2 in the 90s, I was like, this is a must have.
Yeah.
Immediately. Yeah. Now there's, I got one that's, when they're doing Black Series for 3¾, that is like battle damaged Hoth Luke with the cuts on his face from the Wampa.
And I have the Wampa one. I've never taken that out of the box. I don't know. I don't know if I ever will, but I kind of want to, just because of that, just to have the Hoth Luke.
Yeah, yeah. So I think for me, it was a good message that sometime in the future, I could, embrace the art of being warm, and I could wear clothes that would keep me safe and alive, and still look and feel cool. And eventually, I did. For the most part, find winter gear, mostly, leather jackets and cool scarves. But I still probably made some poor winter weather dressing choices. I know for you, Leia, Hoth look Leia is a big one. What is it about Leia's Hoth look that resonates with you?
I've always enjoyed it. There's a strength and power to her in that moment. And I, seeing that movie in my youth, I'm not connecting with, she was, in a dress the entire time in New Hope, and here she's a little different. In fact, I saw Empire last. I just love everything about it. And just from a weird, aesthetic, just for me as a young straight boy, look it up. Like that's the Leia I found even the most cute, like to be blunt. Like I just love the hair up, everything about it. And just that fierce kind of look in her eyes as she's getting bleep done. I was just always, it just was built into my life from that point on. So I love everything about it. In fact, when I had the chance to moderate that panel with Carrie Fisher, in 2016, a couple months before she passed away, when she took off her eyeglasses, when it was looking right at me, it was Hoth Leia looking at me, and I froze on stage just in that, like, wow, I'm looking at Leia. Like it was Hoth Leia that I saw looking back at me with those eyes.
That is really powerful. That is such a great opportunity that you had. And I love that story. Mm-hmm. I think it is a lot about her energy in those scenes where she is truly being a leader. That's practical weather gear for Leia in practical let's get stuff done mode, but it still looks cool. It still has like a cut to it. It has like that great sort of Star Wars energy to it. It is basically just like a large snowsuit.
Yeah.
With this jacket and the gloves. I think the journey that the Leia character is going on is so served by that look, right? Empire Strikes Back, she is starting with I am just the rebel leader, and I'm not really listening to my emotions. I don't want to open up. I don't want to, defrost at all, and that's the journey that the character goes on, and the outfit fits that, as well as seeing like, that's who she is. She is a commander. She is the one who knows what's going on, who doesn't leave her post, and the outfit supports that too.
Yeah. And just again, I wasn't super thinking about this at 7 or 8, but just, she goes from kind of passively sitting in the command center in New Hope, hoping that things work out, to, being front and center. That was there, whether I consciously picked up onto that or not at 8, it was there and I got it. And that's why I think I'm always drawn to Hoth Leia.
Yeah. And I think I had a lot of the Leia figures, but I think that's the one that I played with the most. And I think that that's a little bit of the connection for me of like, that's Leia. I also just think the winter weather gear, the cold weather gear, is so kind of important for the history of action figures. Because obviously, as time would tell, a lot of times what sells is variants of the main characters, and I remember getting grumpy, when all the Batman action figures became like, we don't need other characters. It's just Aqua Batman with flippers and he's Aquamarine now. But this was the opposite, right? Of like, the characters actually did put on different costumes in the film. And so we get new action figures, narratively changed gear, snow troopers, instead of just having variety for variety's sake. You need different troopers because you're on an ice planet. That was huge for the design of Star Wars and huge for the action figure market, I think.
Oh yeah. I mean, you're talking about snow troopers, right? That's probably what started all of our love of different classes of stormtroopers, right? That's why we can fill many podcasts on the different looks from snow to shore. But those snow troopers snow to shore. When they showed up, that was something different.
Yeah. So, along those lines, do you want to see more cold weather gear in the future? Is there somebody that you haven't seen really bundled up, that Star Wars character that you would like to see pursuing the art of getting warm?
Rey. And on Starkiller Base, I know we had, you know, she has Finn's jacket at one point in that kind of weird deleted chase. It's there a little bit in the film, but she's out of the jacket. This is someone who, you know, grew up on Jakku. I can't imagine she was feeling great on Starkiller Base. And as she goes through the galaxy, you know, I'm sure even, you know, in events that we did not see in the sequel era, I'm sure at some point she's like, I'm sorry, guys, I grew up on Jakku. It's really cold. And I would love to see just a fierce Rey snow gear outfit, and give me that figure. Let's do it.
I, you know, that was my same knee jerk reaction too. Cause we see her, you know, they got the coats on Kijimi, right? But
yes,
it's just some, it's fine. I'd happily buy an action figure of that, but yeah, no, I really want to see her, you know, in the time after Rise of Skywalker, like, I'm a Jedi, I'm pursuing the galaxy. I've got my Jedi robes that feel right to me. Ooh, I need some cold weather Jedi variants here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And see what kind of awesome, you know, Jedi action cold weather gear Rey could have is fascinating.
Yeah, totally.
I kind of think speaking of the strain where you endure pain and take pride in it, I kind of think the Sith don't care about cold. Mm. But at the same time, I want to see Maul just bundled up in a massive Sith snowsuit.
I just picture that. Have we never, ever seen that even in Legends or Concept? I would love just a big, you know, big coat with like a black fur coming out, you know, a little puffy fur spot with maybe some red. No, some red. I take it back. Be a black coat with like the little lining would be red.
Like Han's hood with the fur lining, but it's bright blood red fur, right?
Yes. Yes. Have we never seen this? Someone is it maybe in the Bane trilogy? Is someone tell me this is out there?
I think a lot of, like, Vader, like, yeah, no, I don't need any weather gear. Like, it's understandable Vader is not putting on a coat when he marches into Echo Base on Hoth. But
yeah.
But Maul, come on. He's topless half the time. You're not gonna put on a jacket.
And Dathomir, you know, see what we've seen there, it seems like it's real humid there. Like, yeah, I don't think he's used to the cold.
He is not used to it at all. Yeah. We talked about this a little bit at the top of this part of the podcast, but I have a pitch for you. I'm curious if you want to see it in Star Wars. So a late in the winter planet that is entirely covered in snert, which is snow plus dirt, in Minnesota. I'm sure it happens many other places, but my life experience has been, you know, people will visit during the holidays when it's just snowed recently and it's this crisp, beautiful, it's sparkling, it's refreshed. And then you get to March and it's just been there forever. And they're just like, yes, a thousand wrappers and rough memories in this dirty, dirty snert everywhere. Would you like to see an entire snert planet in Star Wars?
Yes, I would love to see it actually in like a, not Coruscant, but like a real bustling kind of city environment that also experiences a lot of snow. We've seen tiny versions of it, like, you know, imagine Coruscant, but not Coruscant in the snow. And we're there, you know, what time of year would that be? February, March? I don't know.
Yeah, April.
Yeah, whatever. I know that there's not an April in the Star Wars galaxy, but that time, the Star Wars galaxy, I would love that. And then just complaining, someone being like, oh, man, look at all this dirty snow in the corner. Ah, it'd be great.
Yeah, in fact, I want to have actually a Sergeant Sharp put his fingers in it and taste it and go, snert.
Snert.
All right, on that lovely note, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to discuss all the great non-Hoth ice and snow planets in the Star Wars galaxy back in a moment.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we are back, and we're going to dive into all the non-Hoth snow and ice planets and some of the significant stories that happen there. So there are far more ice and snow locations, particularly in books, comics, legends, than we could possibly cover here. So apologies if we leave your favorite out. We're going to be looking at some of the major ones and some of our favorites. So Ken, let's go to what I think is one of the biggest in the whole story of Star Wars. Let's talk Ilum and Star Killer Base. So we get to see this planet many times in many stories in what is now the Legends, Gennady Tartakovsky's Clone Wars. We see it in the great gathering arc of the main Clone Wars animated series as the source of the Jedi's kyber crystals. What's the importance of this sort of Ilum side of it, the kyber crystals being generated on this ice planet? What is that importance and meaning or aesthetic? Why is it that way?
It's such a beautiful, again, kind of mythical fantasy kind of location, ice caves, something different. It really adds to it. You could have put those kyber crystals anywhere, and I think it would have worked for the theme of what the kyber crystals are. But, I mean, I don't know. It reminds me of, like, Narnia or something. You know, it's just like this real, like, we've all been through the wardrobe and come out on the other end on Ilum. And I just always loved the way it looked and even kind of forgot that, you know, a lot of that, you know, the Tartakovsky stuff kind of introduced some of that. The Gathering arc is wonderful, a wonderful arc, but it's a winter wonderland in a weird way. So it's like we're at the North Pole of the Force.
The North Pole of the Force. Yeah, I love everything you're saying, really pulling out some great examples from North Pole to Narnia. Mm. Of the magical cold, right?
Yeah.
It is very, very high fantasy. Like, I think I had a knockoff Choose Your Own Adventure book when I was a kid, and it was, like, about ice mountains with dwarves. You know, it was... Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the fantasy locations is the cold place. So there's something about Ilum that does feel very, very high fantasy. Go into the cave where you have to explore yourself in order to reveal these magic crystals is... So high fantasy. But the other thing I like about it is it's this great counterpoint to Hoth, right? The meaning of Hoth in that context is remote, desolate, dangerous. You know, you're not wanted there. And this is cold is nature, right? That cold doesn't mean barren. It's just another place of nature. It's in fact a beautiful place. And the idea of ice and snow as crystals that then, you know, blossoms into this idea of kyber crystals that makes them so natural and so much just a part of the luminous galaxy is really great. And you could have had them hanging from, you know, trees in a beautiful forest. But but the cold, I think, really is that, like, it's still natural, but you have to work for it. You have to venture forward, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you could, you know, without stretching too far, quite frankly, I think you could connect it to finding hope within the fear of Star Wars. It's a great warmth at the center of all that, literally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. You got to search for that warmth in the cold and change your views on how to deal with cold. And cold might, you might immediately, as you land there, you're like, it's cold, I might die here. This is a dangerous place. But no, you got to search for the warmth there, hope and the fear.
Yeah, no, I really like that. And I think that ties to, you know, if you're going to have a negative attitude about cold, that it doesn't mean barren and lifeless. It can be extremely alive, which is another great way of saying what you are of finding the warmth and the hope in a place that could be cold and frightening.
Yeah.
So then, of course, as was hinted and then confirmed by a video game, right?
Yeah.
That Ilum is converted into the horror of Starkiller Base. Do you like the story of the Empire and the First Order weaponizing this sacred natural planet?
I really love it and hope we get even more. And Fallen Order was, I thought it was a very effective use of it. This is one of maybe the only things when you look at Episode 7 that I, you know, there's, a, you know, you can, we love that film without a doubt. But, you know, sometimes you might go, the big three, Han, Luke, and Leia, we never got that scene, right? You could, it's fair to ask those questions. I just think Ilum, I was always behind the Ilum theory, and once it's confirmed, it is one of my favorite things. I just I don't think Force Awakens needed someone to point and go, it's on Ilum, because 90% of the people watching would have been like, huh? So I get that. So I'm not saying it's a missed opportunity, but there's so much to that and so much to what it means. It also connects to Palpatine, the Emperor, the plans. And First Order picking up those plants and how connected are they? Like, all that stuff is there. Plus what you're talking about, this weaponizing of this beautiful sacred place. There's a lot to it. It all exists. It's there, even if no one actually said it in The Force Awakens. But that's one thing I look back. It had to be, clearly, JJ comes up with it and team come up with this concept. And along the way they go, well, we could put it on this part of the star map and it would connect to Ilum if you so desire.
Yeah, and it would build into the story that that Rogue One was really putting solidly in modern canon, that kyber crystals powered the Death Star. So a planet that was converted into being a Death Star-like actual planet, well, what planet would that be? Well, maybe one that is where kyber crystals actually come from, or at least one of the main sources. It all makes great canonical sense. Yeah, I think this is one of those things that is, for right now, it is just kind of true about Star Wars, and you can embrace it however you want. I embrace it positively, that an idea that Star Wars is often tip of the iceberg storytelling, no pun intended, since we're talking about ice. There isn't really like a narrative reason for us to know in Force Awakens that it's Ilum, right?
Right. Yeah.
But sure. and then it adds. I'm not saying that that you should have to dig for details, but that is a part of the fun, that different parts of the Star Wars story connect to each other. And it is kind of fun when you can go like, oh, wait, but now that this leaks out that, oh, it's in the same position and then it's revealed in a video game, then you can watch the Gathering Arc, the Clone Wars animated series, and now it's speaking to this big budget film, Force Awakens, right?
Yeah.
That for me is kind of joyful because it feels like you are reading the sacred texts, you know, and you're discovering things. And obviously, you know, pretty intense Star Wars fans such as ourselves and a lot of our listeners. And it's not a buried secret. It's a known thing, but it still gives you that flavor of discovering something.
Yeah. I know, it's fair. It's like everyone always loves making the jokes about Rogue One and, you got to read Catalyst. No, you don't have to. But when you do, man, you're certainly rewarded. And some of that was with that Ellen stuff for me.
Yeah.
And it was also very early on in the Disney era, right? 2015. And it is a little bit more fun to speculate and everything. But once it became confirmed, I was like, okay, I'd still love to give me an Ilum short story or something set there at the end of the Empire. And again, Fallen Order does a great job touching on it there. But
yeah, the Tragedy of Ilum, the Disney Plus show, is going to be fabulous, I think. Yeah, I just love comparing. It is such a great just straightforward look at light and dark, right? Yeah. Of you watch that gathering arc and it's a tradition for Jedi to or Jedi hopefuls, young Padawans, younglings to go and work with this planet, work with nature, try to communicate with the planet, try to humble themselves, acknowledge and overcome their flaws in order to receive a gift that the planet is then willing to give them, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To get their kyber crystals. So going to a place, humbling yourself, trying to be your best self, and asking for something versus we are going to ravage this planet and make it be something it doesn't want to be in order to, you know, cement our own power.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking, right? But it's also just very powerful. And this is what the story is. You know, take DJ from Last Jedi and show him Ilum versus Starkiller Base and go, are they the same?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Is it just one side blows up the other? Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe he'd probably say a little trip to Ilum Starkiller Base for DJ. So we do spend quality time then on the surface of Ilum / Starkiller Base in the Forest. I wrote The Forest Awakens. The Force Awakens.
You did. That's good.
How does that snowy environment and knowing it's Ilum, how does it add to those scenes for you?
Well, the forest did awaken, and I enjoyed that. It was Endor with snow for me, and now I wish I could go back up the San Bernardino Mountains and act that out as an adult. I did absolutely enjoy the mixture of it of snow often seeming to cover life, but the life springing up out of it, and Rey on the surface of that planet trying to discover. Her new life springing out of what was before. I think that all works for me. Then it cracks in two and it's just a different feel, but being so familiar and going back to even like the Kylo reveal in the teaser trailer. Remember, we spent a lot of time going snow and trees. Like, what do we got?
Endor meets Hoth. How is this possible? It's called the forest. Right. Winter forest. Yeah. I have come to love that as one of my just favorite locations in the films because it has such a Brothers Grimm dark fantasy, you know, European myth vibe about it. And I think what I like about it is, you know, it starts where Finn and Rey are, you know, they are like these kids who've gotten lost in the dark woods that they don't fully understand. Right.
Yeah.
And they're in such a dark place. And as Kylo's marching in there, it feels like Kylo should win because he's at home. Right. He's the monster in this dark, old wintry forest, and I just love all the way those aesthetics kind of inform what's going on with the characters and with Rey's eventual victory. And then just getting into like sheer fun headcanon speculating while you're brushing your teeth, there's such central stuff going on with the Skywalker blade, with that, you know, somewhat sentient kyber crystal in the hilt that had already called out to Rey, and then, you know, being fought over on that planet and going to Rey so that Rey could take the steps that she needs to do, and wondering like that's all happening while the blade is home, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we don't know for sure because we haven't in canon got the story of Anakin getting that kyber crystal. But in theory, it came from Ilum. So the idea of when Kylo's reaching for it, when Rey's reaching for it and it flies to Rey, that all of this is happening for this kyber crystal where it all began is kind of fascinating.
I love that idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost as if the crystal's even more in tune with what it needs to do or who needs it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do like it's sad, but I like the ultimate. I like that Starkiller Base doesn't just blow up and become space rocks. I like that it, you know, becomes this new celestial object. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Absolutely fine with that. Again, more storytelling.
More storytelling. Yeah. It's got a little bit of rebirth.
Yeah. Yeah. You can figure something out. Yeah.
Yeah. So moving on, there's a big snow episode of the Clone Wars that is called Trespass that is on the planet Ordo Plutonia. that is home of the species Talls. We get to see Anakin and Obi-Wan in cold weather gear. Very original trilogy, cold weather gear, which you and I both lost our minds about when we covered this on the Clone Wars report. What does this episode do for the story of ice planets in Star Wars for you?
It cements the legacy of them, because this was clearly done by a group of creators who are and were Star Wars fans going, you know what I love? Cold weather gear on snow planets, Star Wars. And someone goes, I thought I was the only one. And then someone says, I'd love to see Anakin kind of wearing a jacket that Han wore. And then boom, there you go. Wonderful episode, wonderful series of events and arcs and everything in this episode, as we broke it down in Clone Wars Report. But I don't even need to dig below the surface. I just absolutely was like, yes, this is one thing I love in Star Wars, cold planets and cold weather gear. And I got to see two Jedis in that gear. And it was just fun from that angle.
Yeah, absolutely. Just aesthetically glorious. I got myself an action figure of Obi-Wan from that episode in cold weather gear. The hood, when it's pulled up in the episode, has a little bit of don't speak to me vibe, but the action figure really does. You can barely see Obi-Wan's face. And it looks like Obi-Wan in denial. It's just really like, this is for being cold and also to truly communicate, do not speak to me. Right. And yeah. I think for me, like, my experience in Minnesota is, you know, you get really cold and it literally tightens you up. And some of that, you know, that like Minnesota, Minneapolis socializes a ton in the winter in defiance of the cold. But the easy thing to do is to let the cold make you just go like, I just need to get home and I just need to be locked away. And, you know, it can kind of build this energy of tightness and stay away from it all. And I try to have a sense of humor about that and be aware of that in myself. And that Obi-Wan cold weather gear action figure from this episode is just so funny to me, because it's got the like, I'm just going home after work. Thanks for the invite to the party, but no.
You know what? I can go get a hut on a sand planet.
Exactly. Exactly. And then in terms of what the actual story of this episode is, it's a story about, you know, the species, the other people putting a claim to Ordo Plutonia and kind of trying to just take it over, right? Yeah. But then we see the species that lives there, the Talls, being victorious because they're totally in sync with the environment. So it's yet another perspective on these ice planets that they're not just cold and forbidding like Hoth is, that there are creatures who can be totally in tune with this environment.
Yeah, learning to understand and perhaps even love where you are and who you are and connection to it all.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a really nice and peaceful message when the Talls absolutely clean the clocks of the Pantorans. A nice, peaceful message. Any other thoughts on that one?
No, other than I think I need that cold weather gear figure.
Okay, so this is one that you brought up right away when we were talking about this episode, so I wanted to be sure to include it. Maegito and the Murder of Ki-Adi-Mundi. That sounds like a fun mystery novel. So this is a cold planet with bridges and cities and stuff. It's the homeworld of the Lurmen. Does it make Order 66 even harsher that Ki-Adi-Mundi died alone in the cold?
Yeah, and this kind of being the big one to start it all off. You know, we spend the kind of out of that montage, this is one I feel that stands out the most, or we spend the most time there on it, right? You get to see a little sequence and the music's swelling and playing, and it is this cold, distant land. And I absolutely think it just it's the indicator for this, the play that's about to be run, this cold, distant thing. And on that bridge and Ki-Adi's face, the turn, and I know Ki-Adi's made some mistakes in his life. This we know, but just I don't know. It's what do you call it? A sigh, a shrug, a just acceptance, but also, man, I can't believe this happened. And almost like it all makes so sense. And it's all there on that cold, lonely bridge. The whole thing about it works. Maegito's always stood out to me. The original Battlefront games, there was a great level. I think it might've been the original Battlefront 2. Someone maybe can correct me. I can't remember. Had that map, and I just loved playing that one. And we just don't spend enough time on it in the movie, right? It's just this flash of the sequence, but I love that it's there, and it's an underrated snowy setting.
Yeah, I never played that one. Did you spend a lot of time on the bridges? Did you play where Ki-Adi-Mundi died?
Yeah, no, yeah, you are. You are on the bridges, and you kind of see a little bit more of the city, and, you know, you get to, you know, explore the map a bit. But Those bridges are there. You can fall off them. Very dangerous. No rails. The tanks are there. Everything's there. And I think it just one of the, that battle, that original Battlefront 2 game. I just, my love of my current and always growing love of the prequels owes a lot to that game, because the Mustafar map, the Mygitta map, it was just going, man, maybe there's things about those movies I'm overlooking or not letting myself explore and enjoy.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great. Yeah. I love that as the first of the true montage of death, right? Mm-hmm. Because yeah. It's got, obviously there's the utter horror of Order 66, but it's also got this like little peek into what Lucas always dreamed of the, of the Clone Wars, of like the way Revenge of the Sith is, you know, famously supposed to have started with seven battles on seven worlds. And instead we see seven tragedies on, not quite seven, several tragedies on several worlds. And one of them is this like, well, what is this? What's this, you know, cold, windswept environment and right. large bridge? It's a cool environment, but it immediately does make you tighten up like the cold does. And yeah, that look on Ki-Adi Mundi's face, when he kind of turns around and is like, well, why aren't they following me? Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it does add to it that it's cold and windswept, that death. I'm so excited to talk about this next one, because I think it is really going to play into your art of getting warm.
Yeah. And
that is Vandor and Fort Ipso in Solo. We got some quality weather gear in these scenes. They're taking the cold seriously. Yes. What does that lodge atmosphere in particular add to the history of cold planets in Star Wars?
Well, you know, especially when we first go to Vandor and then seeing it in all the trailers, you know, it's the conveyance, it's the action, it's it looks very Star Wars, just this barren land. And to know that there's people surviving, are they all, you know, on the up and up? Yeah, some scoundrels there for sure. But it just, I love that it's habitable. You can live there. You can find your way and get a good drink along the way and maybe bet on some droids. We don't recommend that here. Some droid fights. But yeah, I just love it. I love the way it was shot. I love Bradford Young's work in Solo. I've always said it might be my favorite looking of the Star Wars films. His choice of natural lighting and everything about that, the Fort Ipso is just something. So it's familiar, but it's so unique to Star Wars. It's that kind of that tension that we all love. And talk about cold weather gear there. Yeah, absolutely. You got some great jackets in there. Lando, looking at you.
Yeah. Yeah. And Han's giant jacket. Come on.
Yep.
he is bundled up for the cold, which is great.
Chewy.
Yeah, I think and Chewy. Yeah, obviously, always Chewy with a little bit of snow in the fur is perfect, beautiful. Yeah, I think for me, like, you go back to Hoth and you get the like, oh no, you'll die if you're outside for too long. But then you go inside and you're not that much warmer, right? Yeah. Or you see characters like the Tulls of like, this is our natural environment, or Ilum. We're like, well, it's something that we need to overcome. This taps into this great part of winter that I have fond memories of in growing up in Minnesota, which is the respite.
Yeah. Okay.
The sigh of relief. It's nice to be warm because it's warm, but it's something else entirely to know that feeling of, I am just covered in layers. I am freezing, but I'm also drenched in sweat from being under all those layers. And then the sweat froze.
Yeah.
And there's just this, like, there's this clamminess to your body. And then you walk into a place that isn't just a break from the cold, that it is designed for warmth and comfort. Everything from the actual, like, fires to that nice warm wood, that lodge look, that lighting, everything about that place is, come in and take a break from the cold and be like cozy warm, right? Like the whole lodge to me gives me like sense memories of like,
oh yeah,
going out sledding and then coming home to like a warm house and stripping away some of the layers, and the cold is still there in your bones, but on the outside you're warming up and you got some hot cocoa or some whiskey depending on your age and inclination, you know?
Yeah, your cheeks are still rosy and red, the fingers got that little tingle of life returning to them.
Yeah, the tingle of life returning, that's what that lodge is to me, and I just love it.
Yeah, no, look, Batuu is great. Galaxy's Edge is great. Like, can they open up one that's in the snow and give me Fort Ipso? I'd be there.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, and it's so in Earthly Lodge, but still very Star Wars at the same time. So great design. Moving on to another cold planet, and that is Kijimi. Like we talked about, we don't see any really different cold weather gear, but 3PO wears a coat, and I'm waiting for that action figure. This is another planet that has like a functioning civilization in a very cold place. What do you like about the vibe of Kijimi?
There's a little bit of, I don't want to say they've all run away to live there. That's probably not fair to the people who maybe didn't do that and were born and raised there. But it's got that outskirts kind of vibe. Not unlike you go to a place, you know, I use the example of L.A. It's one I know the most. But like, you know, you head 2 hours outside of L.A. and you're in Big Bear or Lake Arrowhead or something like that. It is it's so close, but it's not. And it's a different life. It's a different way of life. It's a different people, you know. And they look, you know, like they look at you like, oh, you a flatlander. You get those kind of reactions. But it's just it's their world. I like that about Kijimi. It's got a little bit of a village vibe where just at least where we see. Right. And it's even when you fly in, I love the way the layout of it, you know, when you're seeing them approach it there in Ochi's ship. Might be one of our best locations for a snert in Star Wars at this point.
Absolutely.
It's a snerty city. Beautiful, but a little dirty.
It's yeah. A little bit of a snerty city. Yeah. I love seeing this urban community, right? Like clearly, everybody's cold, but everybody's hustling around and kind of you get to see, sadly some homes being invaded, but you get to see some places of business and, it's, you know, it's the thieves' quarter, right? We know that it's maybe from expanded storytelling in books that it is. Yeah, it is a little bit of a hideaway for people who don't want to be found, want to make a base in a kind of an isolated place. But it still has this almost Dickensian Christmas Carol vibe.
Yeah,
because it's this dusting of snow and it's cold, but it's urban, too. And yeah. I think that's what was like really interesting and different to me.
You know, and again, the bar's got a bar. It's got its own little, the tingling of a life returning vibe there. You know, it's got all of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It really makes me want to see like Thieves Quarter decorated with lights for Life Day, you know?
Yes.
And I want to see Oma Trace haunted by bartenders of the past, present, and future.
There you go.
Yeah, so a lovely one. As we begin to wrap up, we are closing out with some of the most recent, Kijimi's recent, but some of the most recent on television, snowy, cold planets. We have Patagon, and Maldo Crease. So there was an error in an interview, but there are two different cold planets in The Mandalorian, it turns out. Patagon is in the first episode featuring those ice taxis and that big monster, the Ravenak, and then Maldo Crease is the ice planet that frog lady and friends crash on with the hot baths and the pissed off spiders. So what do these planets add to the lore of cold in Star Wars for you?
It's same kind of, you got a runaway vibe and just the dangers out there and you got to really be connected to it, to the land to survive it. And you can maybe find your way forward if you do so. Patagon is, I don't know if I ever need to go back to it, but I still think it's really interesting. It's a great way to start the series. And we're not, you know, we're in this era of New Republic and we know kind of the victory's been had and the series starts just on the far end of the cold, forgotten parts of the galaxy. Love the use of that there. And, you know, plus seeing Brian Posehn in Star Wars, always fun, third old 90s and beyond comedy film. But Maldo Crease is an interesting one to me because it just the speculation of it being Ilum ran rampant, and I loved it. And you know, our friend Alex Damon was behind that as well, and you know, not behind it like he created the controversy, but like he was all about that theory too, and I was too. I wanted to see it explored, but most likely we all kind of anticipated it would be something completely new, which I'm glad as well. But it just again drove home the fact if you see something snow, it's got to be this. Just like Finn pops up in the Force Awakens teaser and sand dunes. And you're like, that's got to be Tatooine. And I like that it's Jakku. I like that it's Maldo Crease. But it just shows that we love these environments and our attachment to these environments. And snow in Star Wars is something that's big.
Yeah, yeah, and expanding that palette. Yeah, I really agree with you about Patagon, that it does such great storytelling, right? It emphasizes the situation that this is cool, but also just drudgery, right? That the Mandalorian has to go way out to this incredibly remote place that looks like people are only kind of living there maybe for some practical reasons or to hide out, right? That Mithril is hiding in this remote, weird place. And it looks like we've kind of managed to set up like a bit of community and a bit of way to function. I love that, you know, Landspeeder Taxi gets called by that Kubaz blowing a weird horn.
Yeah.
You know, and then even then it's like, but it's not really practical because there are beasts everywhere. You know, it's so well done to use some recognizable parts of Star Wars between land speeders and ice worlds and beasts and bars. And just like in a very short amount of time, it just throws a lot of the different Star Wars elements together. So it's such successful storytelling, I think.
Yeah. Great way to start the series.
Yeah. And then the same thing for me with Maldo Kreese is it's definitely the Hoth brand of Snow Planet, I think, where it's like, this is only making everything harder. That one was really relatable to me of like, I related to the Mandalorian when his vehicle was trapped in snow and ice and it was not going to move.
It's like starting a Ford Fairmont in a winter of 94 or something like that, right?
Yeah. If I could call the New Republic as AAA, you know, well, I guess he didn't call them. They were looking for him. But yeah, so it's got that vibe of just like, this is an impediment. To existence. I did not mean to get stuck here. But then I love seeing that it's got some hot water baths. That's cool. But then, of course, the big feature of Maldo Kreese as we've seen it is, you know, the spiders everywhere, the ice spiders, which are just, again, so high fantasy. And I think ultimately for me, I really like that reminder of everywhere is somebody's home.
Yeah. But yeah, that's not the home for me, that one. So I'll pass.
I can see a little meme in my mind of the Wampa and the ice spiders, you know, shaking appendages and going like, yep, everywhere is somebody's home. And sometimes we don't want them there.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'd survive a Wampa, but I'd rather try than being chased by those horrible, horrible spiders.
I cannot, sadly, leap like a frog, like Frog Lady does. So yeah, I would... I could maybe duck a Wampa. I could not escape the spider. So there you go. Yeah. Any other cold ice snow planets that you wanted to mention?
None come to mind, right? I wouldn't mind. None come to mind. I wonder if there's any other locations that we just haven't seen at the other time of the seasons. I mean, Endor, you know, I'm trying to remember some of the Ewok caravan and Kurt stuff. I can't remember if it's snowed in there, but I got to imagine there's some snow in Endor. I'd love to see Bright Tree Village at Life Day.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think that's long been a joke of like, does any planet have seasons?
Right.
Is Hoth always that way? And yeah, definitely some of the places we've seen, like, yeah, let's see them snowy here and there.
Yeah.
I think the last one for me is we just talked about the Clone Wars episode of Friend in Need on the planet Karlak. Mm-hmm. And that's a nice, like, hey, there's communities here getting by. It's kind of more of a dusty snow vibe. But I bring it up just to say Ahsoka's winter weather coat is great.
It absolutely is. Oh, you know what? Rebel, Sabine's, her House Wren.
I
love the look there. It's very James Bondy. Like you're going out to meet a Bond villain in the snow. I love that one there. I'm scrambling because I'm so out of trivia practice, which is a nice relief to have in life. Of her actual the planet within Mandalore. But yes,
yeah, nice. Well,
is it Cronest? Is it Cronest? I think I typed fast enough to see it. I don't know.
Why don't you Google while we wrap up here?
Yeah.
The final question that I'm going to have for you once you're done with your Google fingers is along the lines of what we're talking about of like, look, the winter celebrations come to many places. If you could celebrate Life Day on a snow planet, which of the many snow planets would you pick and why?
I think I'd go to Fort Ipsel. On Vandor. Yeah. And the why is it has a little bit of vibe of your hometown bar that you're going to visit. So, you know, the drinks are cheap. You might run into an old friend you want to see or maybe two you don't want to see, but you're going to be there and you don't have to stay long, but it's warm and cozy all at the same time.
Yeah, and there's some bigger tables if you really want to socialize with a large group and some darker corners that you can go off to if you want to have a smaller conversation.
Yeah.
I would like to come up with a different answer, but that is, for me, absolutely the honest answer that it is so warm, it is so cozy. I want a drink there. It does have a hometown vibe. Whatever the Star Wars version is of being able to order a Pabst Blue Ribbon Tallboy and a shot of Jameson as one order, they have that, right?
That's the place. That's the place.
How are your Google fingers doing?
We did. It is sort of Crownest, K-R-O-W-N-E-S-T. Of course, it has the icy world that is a home to the ancestral home of House Wren. And I love the design of that. Sometimes the newer stuff flies out of my brain a little easier than the stuff I grew up with for 40 years. But love the look there. Like I said, I'm expecting Daniel Craig to pop out with like some silencer on his BP7 and just being like, let's do a mission.
Yeah. One of my favorite James Bond jokes is I've had people say to me like, you know what James Bond movie I like? The one where he skis. Yes. And I say that doesn't narrow it down as much as you might think. Yeah. So yeah, I totally get that vibe. I'd love to see Daniel Craig zipping by on his skis outside the compound on Crownest. Well, that is our big look at ice and snow and cold in Star Wars, all the great aesthetics, all the great meanings, and all the different ways to enjoy or endure the cold. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, if you want to listen, follow, or ask us a question for other episodes, you can do so by going to Twitter and find us at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcasts available a lot of different spots, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music. And we're now here on Acast merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And we can be supported directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at Kadnapsock or go to my website, kadnapsock.com. Speaking of snow, I will be in Washington, D.C. in mid to late December. Better get some hot gear for that trip, doing comedy with Mark Ellis out at the Comedy Loft. Tickets available on my website. Joseph, for you.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website for all sorts of different comedy adventures, my podcast Obsessed, some comedy albums. I have a holiday-themed comedy album, in fact, that includes a bit called Breaking Up with Snow. And to anybody listening who has lived in cold areas, lives in Minneapolis, Minnesota area in particular, as always, want to highlight, these are my life experiences, and I know many people have different life experiences. My wife and I are not going home to Minneapolis this holiday season, but now that I've talked about it so much, Ken, I kind of want to. Now I'm in the mood to try to endure the cold and wear a cool scarf like Luke Skywalker. So I look forward to the next opportunity to do that. If you want to check out any of that stuff, my website is just my name, josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for all the Wampas just trying to get by, this has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both as twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in...
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional, unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.